All right. It didn't do the announcements, but it is started. So we're ready to go. We're live.
That's come to order. Let's do a roll call, and we have some new members, and I would like the new members, when it comes to you, to be introduce yourself and tell us a quick, you know, 1 minute or so bio of yourself and what you want to do here or anything you want to, but just at least introduce yourself and where you come from, what your background is. Okay, I'll start. I'm Daniel Weaver, the chair. And I'll go here. Kevin.
Kevin Tyler, Clark County Public Works.
Dave Rowe. I worked at TriMet for 30 years, 20 years with the light rail. And now I'm working at Willamette Shore Trolley down in Lake Oswego. And we just had our 6 mile line opened up because there is 3 trestles had to be repaired, and we also have the battery going, so we got everything go, and our season is over with, so we'll have to start running next year, but we're going to try to get a few runs in down for fall time.
Welcome to the board.
Thank you.
Danielle Cowley, Public Works.
Terry Gardner, Town of Yakult.
Neil Chambers, Railroad Advisory Board.
Jim Pearson, Railroad Advisory Board.
John Hanson, Railroad Advisory Board.
Jim Malinowski, Railroad Advisory Board.
Greg Smith, Railroad Advisory Board.
Jerry Jacobus, Railroad Advisory Board.
Mark, I worked for the SPNS back in the 60s. I volunteered for the Slatchie Prairie for the last 20 years. And I just want to do what's best for the county. Thank you.
Mark Daniels, Railroad Advisory Board.
John Schaefer, Railroad Advisory Board.
Thank you.
Michael O'Connell, former property owner along the railroad at Holman Station area.
Marvin Matheson, I'm a neighbor at Holman.
And Randy Williams, Chalachi Prairie Railroad, pulling up the tail end of the train.
And online, we have Kevin McDowell, Prosecuting Attorney's Office. David Millar, you want to come off mute? And because you're one of the other board members, new board members.
Railroad Advisory Board. David Millar, local to Salmon Creek area, new member of the Railroad Advisory Board.
Welcome to the board.
Thank you.
And then I see Maggie Dirk, City of Vancouver, Jackie Lane, Kim O'Hara, and Nancy Halverson. I think that's it.
Okay. Well, welcome everybody. Has everyone read the minutes?
I move we accept the minutes as written.
Neil has moved. We approve the minutes. So I hear a second. It's been seconded by David Rowe. Any discussion, questions, comments, corrections? All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Just a couple of comments before we get started. There are a couple of things that we may want to touch upon today. They're in the new business, but I just wanted to remind folks about the quarry up in North County and the issue about the comprehensive plan update. And David, that's geared primarily at you because you're involved in that. I have a request to make, but we might want to discuss it further later on. The you're on that group, the community advisory group for the climate planning.
Well,
we'll get to that later on. I just want to bring those up so everybody's thinking about it. All right, we don't have anyone here from PVJR, so Randy, you want to give us a report from BYCX?
Thank you, Dan. Couple things, well, probably more than two. We had a good weekend this last weekend. Obviously, we're still running a shortened ride because of the rock slide damage. We've cut our prices by a third, but then we added another train. So we've made up for it. And we were more than sold out this last weekend. We had 304 on Saturday and 329 on Sunday. Our sold capacity is 300. So, yeah. And Jerry was the conductor that kept it all under control. So that's worked out well for us. There, obviously, the PBJR isn't here, but I want to thank them. They made a donation of two ecology blocks up. You remember I was looking for those a while back. They had unloaded a large transformer down in the port someplace and used them for ballast on a crane. And nod to Railworks went and got them for us with a grapple truck, brought them up, put them in place, and put a cable across our parking lot, which we have to keep locked to keep our local Terry's neighbors out of there, because they like to do donuts in our parking lot, throw rocks out in the street. So now we have a more secure parking lot. Railworks looks like they've staged their equipment out there. I talked to Evan Klein today, who is the project manager on the Railworks side. They're going to bring a lowboy in Thursday and offload their high rail excavator. And then next Tuesday, they'll be going down the tracks to start beating on the rock at the rock slide. I did caution Evan to check the capacity of Bridge 25 and how heavy the excavator is. He hadn't taken that in consideration, but I did give him an alternate set on point that wouldn't be quite as, actually two of them that wouldn't be quite as sanitary as setting on in Yak Hole. But anyway, he's looking at the weight capacity, but they're going to start next. They're coming back into town Monday. They're off this week, and they're coming back in town Monday and immobilizing out Tuesday. Apparently all their water work was finished last Saturday night, I think. One of the neighbors said there were lights on down at Bridge 20 until midnight. So, yeah, they were getting their stuff done. So Railworks is doing a good job. They're very easy to work with. They've been very accommodating for us. We're giving them space to stage equipment on the tracks that we're not using. So that's working out well. There's a lot of timbers, a lot of stuff out there stored in our yard. So they're making progress doing something out there. Let's see. So our next big event will be what we call Headless Horsemen, which is the weekend before Halloween. We'll be running three trains a day, Saturday and Sunday, 10, 12, and 2, to try to, again, make up for the loss of revenue from the longer runs. But this is working out well for us. We're also doing minor track work. One of our members was out yesterday changing ties in a siding. It was a nice day. He had the ties. He had the time. So he was changing ties. We were able to secure a high rail crane and a ballast regulator that was on the back of a Grote Brothers truck going to scrap. And it runs, had some leaky hoses and cylinders, and we're gradually getting it back into shape. But that we'll have a Kershaw ballast regulator that we can use with a little bit more work on it. I was up at the shop Saturday, and we're firing it up and going through all the exercises. But again, just a lucky find. One of our members spotted on a truck and it was going to scrap. And anyway, got the crane and the ballast regulator for $5,000. So that makes the third piece of equipment we bought out of scrap that was useful for us. So that's what's going on. We're getting ready for Christmas time. We'll be doing our Christmas train starting the Saturday after Thanksgiving. I did coordinate with Evan today. We'll be on the tracks next Friday because we'll be decorating for Halloween. and he's aware of that. No, they said they will be out of our way. So anyway, that's what I have. Anybody have any questions for BYCX?
I have a question on that project you said that RailWorks was working on. Is that the one that was in last week's minutes that said they were going to extend their work period through October 15th? That was reported by Danielle, I guess, last week.
Well, their water work permit expired, October 15th. So anything that was in water, all their pilings and things that were wet work, had to be done, I guess, well, by October 15th. They were leaving town, so Saturday night they were done. I know, Kevin, you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's correct. So the construction was broken into phases, with in-water work being prioritized. And what I mean by in-water work is when they were actually in a stream. So there were like four of the bridges had pilings or other work where it was in the stream, and the environmental permit regulations require that that work be done by October 15th. So they prioritized that work first, and then they're coming back and they're doing the remainder of the bridge repair work. And I have a 3-week look ahead schedule I can show you guys as soon as Randy's done.
Okay.
I'm done if nobody has any other questions. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks. Okay.
So I will bring that up. Let me share it online so that everyone else can see it as well. Zoom in a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. So they call this a 3-week look ahead schedule. It's actually 5 weeks. And they're showing this would be starting the 22nd. As Randy mentioned, they're off this week. Jerry, I think before the meeting, I told you they were starting this week, but that I missed that they were off a week. They have to rest a week because they're working such long hours. So they'll be starting on bridge repairs for bridge 25. And also the rock slide removal next week. And then the other crew will be finish up the remaining work on bridge 6 and starting on bridge 23. So they're making pretty good progress. They got all that in-water work done in the time frame that they were supposed to. And now they're getting into the meat of the work. And as you see, they'll be busy over the next 5 weeks. And there's still more to do after that. So, but they're making good progress. And I'm glad to hear that they're good to work with.
Have you, it doesn't really affect us, but any update on the, well, I call it the crime scene, Heisen store, where the rail was torn out, 18.7?
Yeah, that's, I don't see it on the schedule here, but we did issue a change order for that work.
Okay.
So RailWorks will make that repair, and we'll see it on this schedule at some point in the next month or so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. They've already mentioned they may need rail, and I said, whatever's in our yard belongs to the county.
Yeah, and same thing. We have rail at our 149th Street Operations Center. So
yeah,
they have access to all of that. So that's an update on the bridge repairs. The remaining grant funds for the track work, we're expecting to see a repair estimate and sort of call them final plans, but really it's a list of quantities. Coming from Excel Tech here soon. We know that that's going to be a lot more than we can ever afford with what's left from the grants. So we're going to make some decisions on where we can spend that in the most effective way possible. And then put that work out to bid this winter at some point. That's all. That should be coming soon.
Question.
Yes, sir.
You've got an item there, Selachie Prairie Scenic Railroad rides. Are those south of Yakult or? When I see Selachie Prairie, I think that you're talking about scenic route from Yakult North.
I think that's just the name they're giving the section of track where Randy's running the train up there. Selachie Prairie Railroad rides coordinate track usage. So that's the 3 days I think they mentioned where you'll be out decorating and you'll be running trains on the 26th and 27th. So that's what that is referring to, Jim.
I think they also, the project, the railroad, the county's railroad is called Selachie Prairie Railroad.
Yeah.
And that's what's on the worksheet.
Yes.
The track from Yakult to Selachie is accepted track. We don't run passengers up there. This track's in such poor condition. We just run our equipment through carefully.
All right. And then the other things, as we already mentioned, our four new members are on board. We got their information on the website as of Friday. And which means we also need to start talking about Open Public Meetings Act training. So I know there was a question last time about how often do we have to do this? So the rule in the RCW is when appointed to a new term or every 4 years. Since you guys are on 3-year terms, as long as we do it every time you're either when you're appointed to a term or reappointed to a term, then we're in good shape. So for those of you that are new, you'll receive an email from me with a link to go to the training. You watch a few little videos. You let me know that you've completed the training and we document it with a certificate. And then there's the two members that were recently reappointed this year, Mark Herseg and who's the other one? Eric David. Fuller. Oh, David, yeah, you'll get an email from me as well. But reappointed members were Eric Fuller and Mark Herseg. And so you guys will get information from me as well. So I think that's it on Open Public Meetings Act training.
And Kevin, before you move on from that, I'd like to add something on to the OPMA topic that you just addressed. And that is...
This is our attorney.
Okay. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. This is Kevin McDowell speaking. I'm with the prosecuting attorney's office. The point that I wanted to make is that there is some issue about whether or not the Open Public Meetings Act actually applies to purely advisory boards and commissions. There is authority that states that the OPMA does not apply to purely advisory boards and commissions. And so I think I wanted to note that, and where that leads us, I think, is that having that training and following OPMA procedures to the extent practicable is a great idea. And there's and certainly there's no reason to not do that. But I just want to make it really clear that simply because the members are receiving this training and endeavor to follow the OPMA as closely as practicable does not mean and should not be construed as an indication that the OPMA does apply to the Railroad Advisory Board as it is purely an advisory board or commission. So that was the point that I wanted to make on that.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
Yes, thank you, Kevin. All right. So that's all I had to share at this point. I did receive car counts from Eric Temple. I just didn't get those out to you guys in time, so I can send an update on that tomorrow or the next day. Yes, sir.
Did we ever get an estimate on it? Did we ever get an estimate on painting the bridge over Highway 99?
Yeah, so that will be included in the bid that we put out along with the remaining grant and track repairs that we'll do with the remaining funding. I was not able to get a formal estimate from our team internally because we don't have anybody who's experienced in doing that work on railroad bridges. In fact, the county doesn't have a bridge maintenance team. So we are doing an educated guess in terms of what the bid will be. Mm-hmm. And we'll be working with WashDOT, I think, to try to get a better handle on that before we put out the bid.
Once we get that done, we can give the bridges to Eric.
Yeah, the bridges in the south of Hyacinth Store, the south where he's currently operating, as soon as all the bridge repairs that are identified in the lease, are completed, they're eligible to be transferred to PVJR. Yes.
Will you put any protection on that bridge so it doesn't get graffitied up? I think it's pretty easy to access.
That is an ongoing conversation. Yeah, we're having a lot of trouble with graffiti on that bridge and just, you know, populations moving in and out of the railroad right away in that location. We've been working with the BPA, with WashDOT, with others, City of Vancouver, County Sheriff, to try to keep people from camping in those locations. And it's been a significant challenge.
And there's a camper at the west end of the bridge on the north side. It parks a Bronco, I think it is, at the base of the bridge. And I've seen him going up and behind there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have graffiti in our tunnel. I just saw a bunch yesterday when I was on brakeman duty. We'll get out. We'll get that taken care of.
All right. That's all I got. It's yours, Dan.
Okay. Thank you. The railroad presentation and open house. Does anybody have any comments or questions or where we should be going with that before I speak? Nobody? Well, it's that we agreed to try to do an open house presentation, and that would be in conjunction with development of the railroad if we saw an opportunity to get it done. Doesn't look like we're going to get anything approved for railroad use, any property for railroad use. So it may be premature. And also we have two county councilors who are very good advocates of the railroad are now rolling off of the council. And we don't know what the position of new members might be. I will try to get to them once we know who gets elected to that and find out what their position might be and how we might proceed with this position. But I still think we need to continue to accumulate information so that we're ready to go sort of at a moment's notice of presenting information for public dissemination. I mean, there are a lot of things that can be communicated to the public that they don't know about now, and it's kind of like a political thing. If you don't know about the candidate, you don't know whether to vote for him or not. And it's the same thing with the railroad. There's a lot of people that have misconceptions about the railroad and misconceptions of what it can do for the county. And that's what our purpose would be with this presentation, is to be able to put in an open house or something akin to that and give information to the public about the railroad and why it would benefit Clark County. So that's what we're going to continue to work on. But like I said, it doesn't look like anything's going to happen. And I'll sort of go into what we're going to talk about later, but it doesn't look like, for a number of reasons, like I said, that we're losing some of our supporters on the council. The fact is that they're going through the comprehensive plan update. It's unlikely we're going to get anything put into that at this late date in the process. The only thing we can do is sort of make sure that we don't get totally frozen out in that process. So I don't think there's going to be much done the rest of this year, and certainly probably not in the first part of next year, because we'll have new counselors coming on board and they'll have to be brought up to speed as to, you know, what the railroad is and what it does and what it can do. And that might be also a place where we can start our presentation on what the railroad can do, is to educate the new counselors on what it is and what we do and what we can do and what the county can do and what the railroad can do for the county. So again, that's a reason to get all this information pulled together that we talked about previously.
Does anybody know any of these people that are running for the commissioner? Who? Matt Little?
Matt Little. I've talked to him.
We can't hear you.
I've talked to Matt. It was an in-house meeting with a bunch of people from the neighborhood because he lives out in Washougal. Well, he lives up north now, but has lots of background in government. Very open to listen to everything and make a decision based on facts and not emotions. That's the opinion I got from him in front of a group of people. He seems to be, we need to study it. We need to have the facts out and all that. So, and I want to bring up Dan, you know, the new counselors, the county's negative, you know, has a problem with some money right now. You know, to get a railroad, to get industry there, to raise revenue, and then if you leave, get a railroad to take trucks off the road, you have to less road costs. I mean, financially for the county, it's the right thing to do. But the people that are going to have to vote on this have to understand that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We need to, and that's why I say we need to get all of our information pulled together so we can do that presentation. I mean, John and I gave a presentation to the board, but it was sort of not heated in the process. But if we get a comprehensive plan put together and we can present like I said, an open house with some exhibits and some information, then we'll have a better chance of communicating to everybody.
Has the county got an inventory of rock sources? You know, it appears to me that most of the really good rock deposits are up in North County, and a lot of them could be accessed from the railroad.
Right.
Dan, if you're looking for some other people to get...
Hey, Jim, please use a microphone.
I'd be happy to be a volunteer to speak to people.
The guy right there. They're heading it up.
My friend here, too. I mean, really, you know, it might be a good time to, you know, people that haven't really gone up to Yakult, you know.
Well, that's why I say that, I mean, early next year, we need to sit down with the new counselors and get that presentation going so we can really give them a full presentation of what the railroad is and what it does, what it can do, what it should do for the county.
The Christmas train, you know, all the things that Brandy's worked at, you know, for a long time.
To what extent can we tap resources on the county staff to gather this information?
Well, I think any request for information should be accepted readily. I mean, we'd have to go through Kevin to hopefully put some, I don't want to say arm twisting, but at least some pressure on county staff to accumulate information.
Yeah,
it's either in your department or other departments.
Right. Yeah. If there's information that you are seeking, you know, start with an email to myself and Danielle, and we'll do the best we can to point you in the right direction or gather information for you.
One of the things I would like to have from the county is what inventories of rock supplies do you have? What plans are long-range plans do the county have for making sure that there's adequate supplies of rock?
You know, the supply in the rock is twin brother that was a superintendent of schools of the buildings of 18,000 kids up in the Puyallup area said that his cost of building for his school district was substantially cheaper because he had right there where his school district was, he had a rock supply. And everybody was amazed how cheap some of his building costs were because of the rock supply versus bringing stuff.
We can't hear you.
Can anyone hear my voice? Can anyone hear me at all?
I can hear you.
I can hear you. I don't hear the meeting. I just hear those of us that are online.
Right.
Can you hear us now?
Yes, Kevin, we can hear you now.
Thank you.
Confirmed.
Apologies.
So, to make a long story short, most operators have been on their own to try and find their own rock.
Well, I just know that I've lived next to the rock pit at Courtney Farm for 50 years, and that's about wiped out. And there is a need for that kind of rock.
Yep.
So with the basalt that's up there, what's it good for then?
What's that now?
What's it good for then?
If it's you can make asphalt with it. It's just a little more expensive to make asphalt rock with it. You can make base rock. And most of the rock that's used in the county is base rock.
Okay. So concrete is not.
No, they won't make concrete with crushed rock. They make it with it crushed rock in the back east because there's no sand and gravel. But the problem with crushed rock, you get these, you know, little flat flakes of rock, and when you hit it with a trowel, they pop up. You don't get a good finish.
Okay, that kind of leads us into this discussion, and Kevin, maybe you know something about this, the whether the sand and gravel or the gravel permits, what's going on with the permits up in North County?
So what I know is that on, I think it's October 22nd, council scheduled a hearing to give some reconsideration to the Chalachi Bluff surface mining overlay. And that's about the extent of what I know. I know that they talked about it. I think a couple meetings ago, we mentioned that they were going to have a discussion about it. And so then a hearing's been scheduled. I know that the appeal is still in court and there's been no decision about that made. And so I don't know the full extent of what this meeting is about.
As I understand, the situation is it's whether to back off of it or continue to go forward with this because we're said to be in non-compliance with that, and we believe we are in compliance with it. Say again.
No, we're out of compliance with growth management.
Yeah, I think that's the question, is if
we're out of compliance.
We're out of compliance with growth management and maybe putting certain grants and
risk
and the meeting is to talk about should we back off. It sounds like you know more than I do.
The meeting is about that issue, whether to make that decision or not.
That would be my guess. I have to confirm. I talked with Jose earlier this week and it wasn't or last week sorry and it wasn't clear exactly what the meeting's about, but I believe that is what you're saying. It has to do with compliance with the Growth Management Act and the fact that there's an appeal in process, but I can get you a better answer than that, or you can attend the meeting next week.
I'll get my rock man to do that.
Yeah. What is the issue with the Growth Management Act? One of the elements of the Growth Management Act is making sure you have adequate supplies of rock.
Yeah, but that's not what we're not in compliance on. What happened was that.
Get up here, microphone.
Normally, what happens when somebody applies to get into these, what do they call it, the surface mining overlay, is they come in and say, hey, I got some rocks. Some they may want to mine it one of these days. And they go, okay, you proved you got rock. You're in the surface mining overlay. And Granite came in and said, you know, we're going to move 3 million tons a year. We're going to do it by rail. Here's a drawing of the plants that we had, we're going to have. And it was very detailed. And under SEPA, it says that you're supposed to evaluate the environmental aspects that are known of the deal. And normally there's no environmental impact. The guy goes, hey, I may mine it, may not, but I'd like to be in the overlay. Nothing to study. Well, in this case, there's a whole bunch of stuff that is in there. And so the environmentalist said, you need to do an environmental impact statement, because you have all these things that you delineated that you're going to do and you're not going to study them. And the growth management board says, you're right, you need to do an environmental impact statement. And Clark County said, hell no, this is just to get in the surface mining overlay. We're not going to require an environmental impact statement. And so they did it. And the GMA, or the growth management board, said, you're not in compliance. And so when you're not in compliance, you don't get any loans, you don't get any grants, and that's where they're at right now.
What it amounts to is they put too much information in their application to have the overlay on the property. So they then said, you got so much information, it's got to be studied by SEPA?
It does feel like the Growth Management Act is making selective use of the provisions of the Growth Management Act in their decision making.
Well, they probably disagree, but Cook, what's her name?
Chris Cook
had a great point, and she said the reason we didn't require an environmental impact statement is because until they actually submit a permit application, they're not required to do any of the stuff that they submitted. They could come in tomorrow and say, "Yeah, we changed our mind. We're going to do something different." So they're not required to do that. So it's kind of hard to study something that they might do. So that's why they didn't require an environmental impact statement. So it's like a ball of twine.
Right. At any rate, that meeting is on the 22nd. I assume it's in the council hearing room here.
That's my assumption. I don't see it online yet. And I can follow up with community planning and try to get more information and get out to you guys.
Send out the exact agenda information if you would.
Yeah.
When it comes out.
We'll do.
Thanks. And if you want to send that, and I'll ask John, our rock guy, to
ask John a question. Eastern Clark County, Washougal, there's a rock mine that they shut down.
The one that's in the gorge?
It's technically in the gorge, I guess.
Is it really fit?
Yeah. Is it because of the gorge, or because the people, because of the trucks going by, didn't want the trucks out of that area?
Partially because it's in the gorge, partially because they abandoned it and lost their grandfather rights, and they didn't apply for new permits.
So they lost their grandfather. Was that better rock than up north?
It's sand and gravel. It's kind of crappy sand and gravel.
Crappy.
But it's not basalt. I owned a pit for a little bit, and I wouldn't use it.
You wouldn't
use it. But generally, they fired it up because, big contractor in town needed a bunch of fill for a big project. So they went in and said, we're grandfathered, and tried to shut us down. And they fought it while they were good. They did the whole job. Nutter. Yeah. And so they're still fighting it.
I have a question for Randy. Your Christmas trains and stuff are still going to be working. Have you got where you can get Christmas trees?
No, we've
by Beasy Farms, you know, they've just got whole, you know, acres and acres of those trees, and I don't know if they're selling them or.
Well, it's gone a couple different ways on that. We like selling the trees. but the trees were getting expensive. And the grower that we were using, Steve Swift, he was right at the East Amboy Crossing, went out of the tree business. So we lost that local source that was reasonably priced. The other thing we lost was the Larch Mountain Corrections crews that came in and loaded the trees and offloaded them for us at our depot. That was another loss. And we were selling the trees in a package with four, a tree and four tickets. And the price of that was approaching $120. And it got to the point that the majority of our pastures at Christmas time are young families with young kids under 10. And our, it was my thought, and I presented the board, and we agreed that the price was going into the nosebleed section, because you can get a permit and go cut a tree for 10 bucks in the forest. And we'd rather keep more pastures there, let them get their tree from someplace else. Plus our crew, our volunteers are getting older, and that's a lot of work. The last year that we did it, we had 600 trees, and to hoist them up on a flat car is a lot of work. And we were running out of young volunteers that could come out there and do that. Conductor Jerry here, he wasn't going to do it. I had a red suit on. I couldn't do it. So, yeah, it just became financially and physically impossible. So we were looking at Rochester to get trees, and it just
wondering, because you used to do that.
Yeah, we're still selling out on our trains. So I haven't got that many negative comments. And once you explain it, that it just was getting too expensive to do and pricing people out, most of the people understand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. The next topic is, I guess I'm going to gear this primarily at Dave Rowe. And you're on this committee, advisory group for climate planning. And I noticed that they talked heavily about the passenger train or using the word transportation. And one place it mentions the freight, but they never talked about it in any depth. And I know that you're aware of it, but if you could put into that the fact that using freight rail to haul things as opposed to trucks, it takes so many trucks off the road, and that also adds to the pollution
reduction,
climate planning. And I don't know who has that information. Do you have that, Neil? Was that, I looked quickly through your information and I didn't see it in there. You don't have that. Okay. Does someone have that exact details on that, that they could pass on to Dave? How many trucks?
When you get a load of raw ballast from Stordahl's, it's 33 tons, and they're proposing 110 cars. So that's a 3-to-1 ratio.
Three trucks versus
one rail. One rail car is equivalent to three trucks. So, well, it's got a truck and a pup. Yeah, truck and a pup is 33 tons.
You can move a ton of freight by rail for
10% of the truck. And what do you base that number on?
That's from the
department. Six. I'm just prepping you for it. When you do have a public meeting, is that based on 100 cars being pulled down a flat?
It's a statement I read in a report from the Department of Energy. I can't put my hands on it.
Yeah, because it's.
But no. It makes sense that rail is significantly more efficient means of transportation than highway transport. Whether it's 10% or 20%, it's still a huge difference.
Well, here's what you're going to go up against if you go to a public meeting. One is, if this is based on 100 cars going down a flat stretch of Missouri versus 5 cars or 10 cars going in Vancouver, is it still 10%, is it 5%, is it 3%? And two, I don't know if you noticed in the paper a while back, but the port kind of dropped a little bomb on us about how they are swimming in manufacturing property that they haven't been able to lease out yet. And they said that whole piece of property that they were going to use for the oil terminal is still sitting vacant. So if the analysis comes, you know, can you drop it off at the port, which is the same distance as where they drop off the cars to begin the PVJR? And then PVJR has to haul it all the way up to Battleground someplace. Where's the fuel savings? And those are the kind of questions you're going to have to handle.
Yeah, but you're still, the advantage of rail is so big that it should swamp any considerations like that.
Well, if they can deliver to the port for the same amount of fuel it takes to deliver it to the starting point of PVJR, where's the fuel savings?
The fuel savings are when you're moving it from there somewhere up into North County.
But if you don't,
and you're also reducing the impact of roads, the expense of maintaining roads.
But if it never goes into North County, but just stays down here by the river.
So you're saying if they develop the property at the port, doing the same thing as they would do up in Brush Prairie area, you would save the fuel, taking it up there.
They got more land available than we're going to get from 55 to 17.
But isn't there some in the paper about the pollution in that port area down there that people want to get cleaned up? And if you're going to have development down there, you're going to have more pollution.
This isn't that property. This is the stuff where they're going to put the oil terminal, where they have a big loop right in that area.
They have
right
the loop track in there now.
I think a part of this is going to have to, you're going to have to talk to Eric and find out what his plans are. You know, if there were rock coming out of the quarry up north, how many freight cars would it be hauling at a time? How frequent?
We're talking about two different things here. 5517, we're talking about industrial development alongside the railroad. You know, the rock quarry is a different deal. You know, the rock quarry is on its own. It's not part of 5517. You know, what we're going to be trying to do with this open house is convince people to support 5517 to allow industrial development outside of the urban growth boundary.
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, it's not just one. I mean, obviously, they could kind of go hand in hand. I mean, the rock quarry is one piece of it, but it doesn't depend on 5517. And if you're going to run trains up and down there, do you want to have other things going along that same route? Yeah. You're using the same trains and just pulling an extra car. Makes a big difference.
Yeah.
It, so the question I would also have on there is if they developed a parcel of property there at the port, whatever they're talking about doing, you're saying instead of North County on there, where would that tax money go? Would it go out to the Battleground School District and the schools out in North County?
Nope.
Or does it just stay capped?
Stay down in Vancouver.
There you go.
Well,
jobs.
But we're talking fuel economy when we start this.
Yeah. But again, you know, you're going to need more developable land than just what's at the port. Yeah, that's available now. But is that going to meet all of the county's requirements for developed land for the next 30 years or so?
Well, right now they're talking about 100 acres. So.
Yeah.
That's the old Alco spot place, isn't it? Where Alco used to be.
No. No, this is west of Alcoa. East of Alcoa. You know where they put that huge loop in for the rail? It's all in that area.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, back to the issue. If you could pull some information together and get that looped in the climate planning group, I'd appreciate that. So,
well, they do have some information about how efficient rail is, and they have information from several organizations, but they're still reaching a consensus how citizens and businesses can help reduce greenhouse gases. And they know that railroads is part of that equation.
So. Yeah, but I just want you to try to get some more emphasis on the freight side of it. Yes. And moving it by rail.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else on those two topics that anyone wants to discuss? Okay, I guess moving on to the advisory board, terms expiring. Mr. Schaefer, Neil Chambers, Jim Malinowski, and Mark Daniels, terms expire this year. So, assuming you all are so excited about being here that you all want to rejoin, please notify myself and Kevin that you wish to be rejoined. And that's all they need to do is they don't need to do a full-blown application.
No, they just need to. We need to put out the notice. It's a requirement to put out the notice, but all they need to do is let us know that they're interested in running for another, doing another 3-year term.
I'll say I am.
Well, send him a written notice, so he's got it.
I'll get that advertisement out here in the next week and let you guys all know that it's out, so you can give us your official in writing response.
You two would be sufficient?
Yeah.
Can't hear you.
Okay. I have nothing else on the agenda. Do we have anything from the public?
Yeah, if anybody would like to speak, just take your self off mute and let us know, or raise your hand. Anybody in the room? We got a hand.
What I
was, and just identify yourself for the record.
Michael O'Connell,
thank you.
Former property owner near the Holman area. I'm not going to take a deep dive into this, but I have contacted a number of entities around the country, and some of them are different than what we have without a railroad overlay with a chunk of property like we often talk about. And others are rails to trails and rails and trails and this. And I would just say that in general, the public here does not yet get the amazing value that we have right in our doorstep. And some of those people that I've talked to, and it hasn't been a comprehensive group because I know there are more out there that I haven't talked to that are involved and have up and running things that involve railroads in different ways, they would give their eye teeth to have a situation like this if they didn't have what they had now, particularly with the railroad overlay and that large piece of property that we have in our back, right in our front doorsteps. And I think that at some point we could contact a few of them to give us some direct feedback in whatever form we might ask. And I think that could be helpful in the public understanding what it's not a gift, but what our circumstances are here. And I'd be happy to help facilitate that in any way that makes sense.
Is there someone here that would like to work on that? I'm happy to work with Mike on that. We've talked a number of times about this issue, but if someone else would like to and help pull this together and get information from folks.
We need to wait till the election.
So the question is you're looking for information about the rails and trails?
As I understand what he's saying is that there are places around the country that have similar situations with a rail, whether it's as big or as little or littler than our rail system, but there are other places around the country that would give their eye teeth to have our situation, or that have a situation that they've utilized that provide a real benefit to the community. And the idea would be that we would converse with those people and see how they have done that and how they can, and you can communicate that to our public here. It fits in with our presentation, and we'd get all that information to be able to present to them and say, hey, this happens in Cincinnati, Ohio, or wherever else it might be. Is that a fair understanding of what you're saying?
Thank you, Dan. That's a much clearer description than what I gave.
Yeah, it's basically finding some success stories and being able to present the facts of those success stories and see how they fit into ours and how we can present that.
An example I have is in Meridian, Mississippi. It was a little town that the railroads in the last 20 years has built that community to have arts came in and tourists came in, and it made Meridian, Mississippi a name for itself just by the railroad by itself. So that could be a good example of how railroads can add to a neighborhood and a small city.
Well, I'll work with you,
okay,
Michael, and I'll grab somebody else by the ear.
I'll work with you too, Dave Rowe.
Who was that?
David.
Okay, good. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else have anything that want to add to the meeting? Comments, questions? Nothing else?
Nobody online has anything else. I'm not seeing any hands raised or unmuted mics.
Okay, do I hear a motion for adjournment?
Yo.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.